Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is me, Jonathan Alexander, and I'm here to host our show, Life, Laughter, Happiness. My co-host Barbara, who will be with us here soon, to be with us on soon, but until then, I want to introduce what I'm doing today. I have here a trio of guests. The first one is Mary Brickell. Are you there, Mary?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. It says here that you're a transformative naturopathic life coach, mother, and entertainer. As a domestic abuse survivor, you've driven to help others unlock their full potential. With an open mind, the conventional and alternative therapies to help your clients find what works for them in a judgment-free space. That's what I have about you. The next
one, yes, I have a very eclectic practice.
Is Dr. Stormy Hill. And it
Hello.
Says here that Stormy is the founder and creator of Love Deep Lab. Her own sexuality journey began over a decade ago with tantra, breathe work, meditation, yoga, and therapy. It's been an epic adventure with successes and failures that have included toxic relationships, wavering self-esteem, and disconnection from her own body. It says here that you have a medical degree and an occupational therapy degree, which has provided you with amazing depth and application for the brain and how it works neurologically in regards to sensuality and pleasure. Your background allows you to weave in the cerebral with the somatic in a way that brings in your brain, body, and heart. The work is her deepest passion and greatest honor. Now,
yeah.
Ashley Godorowski. Are you there, Ashley?
Hello.
Hi. It says here that you're a sexual health educator and a sexual pleasure coach. You're the owner of Emerald Sexual Health Consulting. You provide one-on-one coaching and creative workshops on sexual pleasure and sexual fitness. You can find her hilarious educational web series, Just the Tips, on TikTok and various social media platforms. And it says here that you got your bachelor's degree in psychology and your master's degree in sexuality education from Widener University. Now, did I introduce all of you correctly?
Yeah.
Yep.
Great. Okay.
Yes.
This is kind of why I brought all of you here. You know, I noticed sometimes that when it comes to sex, there's usually two approaches. There's the very, very serious approach, which is this is a very private subject. And then there is the humor approach. And what I've noticed is this is the difference between the two approaches, is that when you take the serious approach, you can't really say much. You can only say like a little bit. But when it's humor, you can give a very long answer. Now, the reason I am more likely to offer humor is I just introduced all of you by reading all of your credentials. You have all, one thing you all have in common is you've all made sex or sexuality a study. You know a lot more about it probably than 90% of the population knows. So if I ask one of you a question, more than likely the answer is going to be very detailed, not just vague. The problem is that I don't know, the more detailed it is, the more likely it is that it's going to be humorous. Do you feel that humor, any of you can answer this, that humor makes it easier to be detailed as opposed to just being vague?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Mm-hmm. If you want to add on to that.
No, I was just, as you were reading that and saying that, I think, you know, humor is disarms, right? So humor sort of brings down some of the barriers that we have, particularly around sex and sexuality, because there isn't a subject that's more like shrouded in shame and judgment and,
yes,
you know, media and cultural messaging and all of those things. And humor is just a great entry point. I mean, I always joke that, like, if we're not able to laugh with the person we're having sex with, we might want to rethink having sex with them.
Well, you know, when you're laughing, you're in a, it really loosens you emotionally and physically, you know, you can feel your energy changing. You know, if you do a lot of meditation, you can notice differences in that and in your field. And when you're, you know, that's contagious. Energy is very contagious, whether it is positive or negative. But when you are able to really just enjoy, you know, something that's very natural and healthy, you know, you'll find actually a lot of children that have had early childhood trauma, they end up having different disorders as they grow up, like encopresis as an example, or GI disorders as an example, because your body, you know, when you're stressed or you think you're, you know, shamed or something's wrong, your body tightens up. But when you're more relaxed and you're playful, you know, you can tell a huge difference just by seeing the way someone sits or, you know, stands when they're, you know, in a more of a happy place, an enlightened place, more than a, you know, very serious, you know, is it okay to talk about this? You know, is this, you know, am I going to be judged for talking about this? And I just think it's so silly that such a natural, happy, healthy, that would be like, you know, feeling weird to eat or feeling weird to want to drink water. You know, sex is just a completely natural, normal part of existence. If it wasn't for that, we wouldn't exist.
Well, not only that, I mean, you could also make the art, like, I have a hard time watching movies where a woman is being violently attacked, because we don't have to live in a world where women are violently attacked. We do have to live in a world where people are having sex, otherwise we wouldn't be here.
Exactly.
So, you know, you can't, but here's another thing that goes along with what you're saying, and this is if, and I'm not saying that there shouldn't be some respect for things like trauma or something, but like I was looking at, I think it was one conversation that me and Ashley had. It was she was making a comment about asking, I don't know context of the conversation, but this is what it was. I think you were making some comment about, like, if you were asking your spouse to wear a schoolgirl outfit or something. The thing is that, well, I know, and it's okay to chuckle. It's okay. And by the way, all of you can laugh at any time during this interview.
No, it's a cute thought. But, I actually did that for his act. So.
But what happened was that I was listening to her, and I realized that, okay, I could probably crack a joke right now, but I'm not going to do it because she was really trying to give a very serious answer to what we were talking about. But at the same time, and I think it has to do with the fact that obviously, I'm sure this has happened to all three of you, someone has been crude towards you, you know, at some point. So that's why I get really nervous, because, like, I was getting on the show today. When Barbara comes on, it's going to be four women, you know, and I'm like, okay, I don't want to offend any of them. But at the same time, you know, it's like when you talk, your whole study is about helping people enjoy sex more. That's like saying, okay, go on a roller coaster, just don't have a whole lot of facial expressions. You know, it's like... Or there are certain stories that I could tell you that I'll just go ahead and tell you this one. I don't know if I've told all of you the story, but this is the one. There was one story where I was working at customer service for Walmart, and the rules were that you couldn't ask for a supervisor unless they asked for one. So you're stuck. Well, this lady calls up, and for some reason, she starts asking me questions about what tampons to order. And, like, are they tight? Do they chafe? And as I'm listening to her, I really just wanted to scream at her and say, lady, I'm a man, you know? I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Now, all of you, but here's the reason I'm bringing up the story. Do you think it would be better to tell that story in a humorous tone or in a serious tone if you were educating someone? You can answer that. All of you can answer that. What would you do?
What the context would be like. So would I be educating the woman on about tampons? Like, what is the audience? Is my audience someone who needs tampon training, I guess. Like, so I guess you would introduce it with a little bit of humor just to kind of loosen everybody up and kind of just let everybody kind of take a moment to breathe. And I think laughter is a nice way to kind of get your breathing and kind of get focused on your breathing. And then you can kind of introduce more of the serious topics. That's kind of how I use humor in my approach.
What would the other two say? What would your other two say?
Yeah, I think it's a great, I mean, humor is a great entry point or an icebreaker, right? It's why it often is an icebreaker. And I also agree that humor, you know, is part of the journey, part of the process into sex positivity and healthy relationship with it about and talking about sex, having sex and talking about sex, because it, you can also deflect into humor, right? You can use humor as a deflection,
right?
Or we all can experience like nervous laughter, right? That's just a different way of the nervous system discharging that might not be the healthiest, but it's like, absolutely. I think humor is a great entry point because it's, you know, humor might not be universal, but everyone wants to laugh, right? Everyone loves to laugh. Not everyone's funny, but everyone loves to laugh.
Can you each name a time that you used humor to educate, that it worked better than being serious? Who wants to go first?
Well, I can. I have an 18-year-old son who is neurodivergent, and we talk about everything, including sex, including, you know, drugs and alcohol and sex and puberty and all of the things. And humor is an absolute capstone to our conversations. It's essential ingredient because it allows him. We laugh, and then he's like, "Mom, is this weird that we're talking about this?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Check in with your body. Is it weird?" And he's like, "No." And so then we have this really open, you know, conversations that where if I approached him in a, you know, logical, rational, serious way, he would like run for the hills because it's not a good entry point for me with my 18-year-old child.
Agree with that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, what Mary and Ashley, which do you want to answer that or?
Yeah, like I guess I use humor really in just my TikTok videos. And I think that I do have to talk in code a lot because I can't say like the clitoris and stuff. So I have to use like workarounds. And I think that I try to use humor as a way to do censorship as well. And I also don't want people to think that I'm using the censorship seriously because I don't want them to think that that's like I'm projecting discomfort talking about sexuality. So it's like a delicate balance with making content.
Absolutely.
Right on.
We're on TikTok as well. And, you know, you have to spell boobs and use two flowers for the O's. And I'm like, oh, my goodness gracious. But like you said, it's a
well,
way you
know,
use the humor to sort of segue with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, laughter is one of the most healthy coping mechanisms for just the craziness of life. You know, we get in situations that, you know, make us a little bit, you know, and I feel like it's, you know, it's a very important part of being healthy is allowing yourself a lot of time and opportunities to find the comedy and the joy in life, you know, because I think that's important. And when you are talking about sex, you know, because it's such a stigma, I do agree. I think it definitely helps to just ease everything and just make it playful because it really, I mean, it's, you know, people talk about it being such a big, you know, huge deal. And it is. It's such a, you know, there's energy cords that go back and forth, you know, that's an experience between two people and it can be very playful and fun. And sometimes it's, you know, just a quick adventure for someone, you know, but it's such a broad thing that I think it's in some ways it scares people. Because it's so freeing and because it's so, you know, exciting and enjoyable. So I think that people tend to, you know, get freaked out by it sometimes.
Well, not
and
only
I think
that,
it's a great idea to make, you know.
When we learn, we forget how some of the things make actually, that some of the things that people haven't learned yet actually make some sense to the people who were, that haven't learned yet. Here's a good example. My nephew was, and I don't know if you've heard this story yet, Stormy. I know I might have told Mary this, and I might have told – I know I told Ashley this, but this is a story. Okay, you're going to love this. My sister and my brother-in-law, they sat him down, and they gave him the birds and the bees talk. And they figured, okay, he's got it now. He's got it. You know, he understands what happened. So he starts, but then he starts walking around and he starts saying these things to all these people. And they realize that he doesn't quite get it, okay? So they had to very calmly sit him down and they had to say, Isaac, you almost got it. You almost got the process, except for one simple thing. There's no peeing involved.
Oh. Yeah. Nice. Now, plus reminds me of my ex,
you know,
when he was in elementary school, he had drawn a picture of a boy putting his penis in the girl's belly button. It's you know, kids come up with, you know, it's, I'm trying to understand mm-hmm. it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and it's awkward, right? I mean, like, there's a beautiful awkwardness to sex, particularly, like, the first, you know, a new partner, that there's awkwardness of, like you mentioned, reading each other's energy and trying, and lots of body parts and trying to see what goes where and what people are open to and trying to read people's minds, which we know we can't do, and yet we try to do all the time, particularly in the bedroom. So there is this awkwardness to it, and so laughter is a way to mm-hmm. normalize and bring in playfulness and levity into something that can be very like fumbling, bumbling your way through it, particularly mm-hmm. with new partners. And so I think laughter is a beautiful thing to bring into the bedroom, and not nearly enough. It's not done nearly
mm-hmm.
enough, I don't think.
Here, here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And then I was going through some notes, and one of my favorite books, Guide to Getting It On, in there it says that humor is the sexual lubricant to the soul. So I just really love that quote and how it can help, well, yeah, like loosen you up and stuff and make it so much more easier to flow. And then it's also like
it makes it so different. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, have you ever been having sex and you're just like, da, 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 you know, or then it's, you know, there's so many different, you know, there's just so many different scenarios. But when you're laughing and you're giggling, it kind of takes you back to almost a childhood best friend, you know. I feel like it brings a deeper intimacy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. For sure. And there's laughgasms and gigglegasms because they're so good.
Yeah.
It's like, it's amazing. They're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you, because I mean, I'm curious, do you think that, at what point did you realize that, I mean, I guess you sort of figured it out from the beginning, but I mean, do you feel, because where does it draw the line between being crude and being funny? Like, what's the difference in your opinion?
That's so individual.
Mm-hmm.
That's such an individual thing, because that's really the way you're seeing reality, the culture you come from, the experiences that you've had. You know, there's no single two people that are alike. There may be people that, you know, they may be offended by similar things because they share similar cultures and values, you know, but I feel like just, you know, being authentic, respectful, honest, integrity, you know, just being, you know, it's usually obvious when someone, well, you know, to an extent, you can, there's a difference between someone being malicious and someone stumbling, learning through life. You know, there's mm-hmm. two very different mm-hmm. energies there. And I mm-hmm. think that everyone is just kind of stumbling through life a little bit. You know, Ram Dass, he says, you know, we're all just walking each other home. And, you know, the life experience is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be exploration, you know, and it's society and rules and these things that, you know, different parts of the world and different parts of the globe, you know, we're taught different things as to what's okay to do, what feels good, the things that feel good, what are we allowed to do, or is that a sin, is that a bad thing, you know, and a lot of people, some stay with that, what they grew up with, others, you know, they leave that. It just, I feel like that's such an individual question. You know,
mm-hmm.
do you ladies agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. And then I was just kind of thinking about like the difference between crude and maybe like rude also, like laughing at someone, maybe like a man who lost his erection during sex. Like you don't want to like laugh at the person.
Exactly.
But, like,
exactly.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But because maybe men have associated humor with getting laughed at, they might experience maybe like they they might get anxious or something if there is laughter.
Oh,
and so,
absolutely.
You know,
definitely.
And then, like coaching them around including humor in their sexuality. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, people that, you know, think about women or men even that are overweight and they're with partners or they're too skinny or whatever it is that their partners are telling them that they are, you know, and they're in that for so long and how that affects, you know, that person and their sense of reality. And, you know, that has such a huge thing to do with boundaries and what we're, you know, the time that we're allowed to create our boundaries, especially us women. You know, really, we've only been voting for, 100 years now?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of interesting with that. You know, I'm considering myself, you know, a bit, I'm a feminist. I want everyone to have equal access to things. But at the same time, there is a feminine energy and there's a masculine energy. And we all have both, you know, but the feminine, you know, it's been demonized, I think, the caring, the empathy, the, you know, enjoyment, creation, fun, you know. I feel like rigidity has just been such an issue for so long. I think that's what's really at the root of a lot of this is just, you know, a lot of that rigid programming that, you know, no one wants to do anything dirty, you know. So then it's like, okay, well, what do you define as dirty? You know,
yeah.
And that just
yeah.
even further.
Like you were saying, so one person's crude is another person's hilarious, right? Or rude.
Exactly.
And so like you both have said, it's so personal. And to your point about the partner who might be overweight or underweight or just not feeling good about themselves, I mean, self-deprecating humor shows up so often in the bedroom as well. And that, you know, that, again, can be a deflection. It can be just another way of expressing your traumas, you know, or it might be really something that helps you to relax. And I agree with you that it's such an individual thing. It's just when I'm working with my clients, it's like I just want you to be aware of when you're in self-deprecation because that might just be a learned behavior.
Well, and, you know, I think a really good way to do that is I've heard women, I'm not this way, so it was really kind of shocking when I heard about this, but there's women that they don't actually want to even look at their bodies as they're showering, you know, just because they hate being naked, they hate looking at themselves, you know, and I've met women literally that have told me this, you know, now I can admit maybe when I was younger, you know, maybe I was a little bit shy and I needed the lights off kind of thing, you know, until I got older because of my own, you know, programming and experiences as a child. But I think it gets really deep for some people, like really sad, you know, in that way that you're not allowing yourself to enjoy such a beautiful, happy thing.
Yeah, and to laugh, right? We're talking about laughter, like to bring laughter into it. It's like, it can get so damn serious. Sex can get so serious,
absolutely,
you know.
And
of course, there's
a and bringing
shadow
in,
side.
You know, crazy
yeah,
kinky
sex,
stuff
but...
and playing. You know,
well,
play,
it's also,
you know?
Yeah, I think also it becomes more funny the more details you put in. Like, for example, I was just thinking about this. It's like, you know, like if you listen to Dr. Wu's talk, you know, she's not trying to be funny, but she tries to be specific, which means as a result, she's funny. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's like, okay, you take out the cucumber and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
yeah,
and I think it makes us laugh because it's stuff, you know, silly things like that, like using whipped cream in the bedroom or, you know, getting, we're going to go get the toys. You know, it makes you smile because it's not the mundane. It's play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it, like,
absolutely.
Kind of makes me think, like, people, like it's cute and see, like, a little, like, an older lady, like, teaching us about sex, too, and it was new and different, and that kind of brings up humor. And I think, like, for example, people would laugh at, like, the idea of the foot fetish, because it's new and different, and maybe they're not used to it, but not until they get a massage from someone who has a foot fetish, then you don't stop laughing at it anymore. Like, as you experience it, you get comfortable with it.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I love that you pointed out the age thing, because growing up, one of my biggest dreams was to be Dr. Ruth. because I thought she was so cool, and it was so, oh my goodness, I'm going to stay up, and, you know, the lights are going to be out, and, my grandparents are going to be asleep, and I'm going to watch Dr. Ruth, and it's so scandalous, you know. But it was because, you know, sex was such a weird thing in my home growing up, so that was an outlet. So I can definitely agree that, you know, adding a touch of playfulness and joy, you know, comedy to make, you know, make fun of it just a little bit to tickle you, you know, a little bit. It definitely lightens it and makes it easier to actually even pay attention and be able to absorb, you know, what's going on. It's like if you're learning anything, do you want to just be sitting there, blank, or do you want to really enjoy it? And I feel like it helps you with application better. I don't know what you guys do with psychology, if you, you know, physically show people, you know, because I've heard some people go and do that with massage therapy and stuff like that. But I think it's just really important to teach how to, you know, do these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Now, do you, I mean, okay, was somebody going to say something? I didn't mean to cut anybody off.
Nope.
Oh, but I mean, do you feel like it's when humor is used? Because I think the thing is that, I mean, like I said, back to the rail, the roller coaster analogy, I mean, your whole job is to make it so that people have more fun doing this.
Right.
You know, and is to basically, and then by the time that you succeed, the woman's face is not going to be serious. You know, she's going to be something else. I mean, you know, it's just, I mean, I'm not trying. And it's very hard to talk about sex without being funny. So I think once you admit that it's funny to begin with, it's actually
well, it
easier.
Is. I mean, have you seen some people's O faces? I mean, it's silly how we look. You know, it's silly how we sound. You know, I mean, you're listening to a guy, you know, it's funny. We sound animalistic sometimes. You know, that's, you know, it shouldn't, you know, it. And I just think it makes it not not as shamey, you know, when you look at it lightly like that.
Yeah, and actually that just kind of brought up a question. Oh, sorry. I was just thinking, like, with how we have to kind of perform with sexuality, do you guys think that porn has kind of taken away some of the humor experiences within sexuality?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think it's right, so you're already on the outside, right? You're already in voyeur with porn. And then, to your point, there, you don't see a lot of hilarity in porn, right? Or any.
You know, that is a good point, because of desensitization. If we just see, you know, that's a good point. I hadn't actually thought about that, but that could be a thing, you know, after, especially if you see people with porn addictions. And that's a very real thing, you know. I'm not saying porn is a bad thing by any means. Obviously not, you know. But you can make anything addictive. You can make Coca-Cola addictive. You can make, you know, whatever.
That's funny. I wanted to go into something else with that, because it's interesting, because when the only thing that porn does is it depicts sex in situations where you wouldn't normally be having it. It's like pizza guy delivers pizza. That's usually not how it happens. But this is something that I hope Barbara is okay. She wouldn't be missing a show on purpose, just, you know. But there is this incident that happened to me, and I think it would be good to bring up to all three of you just to see what you say. I was in college, and I don't know who I told, maybe you I told this, but I was in college, and this lady walked up to me out of the blue and asked me if I wanted to go to the movies sometime. And she was an older woman, about 40-something years old. Well, what happened was that, as I told you, I'm on the spectrum. So I don't pick up on social cues. My mother panicked when she heard that this lady asked me out, because she thought, oh, boy, you know. And so one day she asked me out. We go out, and to make the long story short, it ends with her trying to come on to me sexually, and I had no idea what was going on. I said no to her because she was married, and I didn't feel it was right to sleep with her. But the point is that I couldn't tell what was going on. So I talked to my psychiatrist about it, and he said, you need to understand something. Men tend to be very dumb when it comes to this sort of things, and women tend to be very smart at this sort of thing. He said that when a woman asks you out to dinner and you go back to your place, that that usually means she wants to sleep with you. See, the problem is that this is before you all answer, I just want to say this, is that men aren't good men like me are taught that no means no, which is fine. I get it. But nobody ever really educates us what a yes is. And that's why I was hoping that maybe you could comment a little bit on that story. I mean, you understand. I mean, it's one thing to say that no means no. I get it. But if you don't tell us what a yes is, and the reason I needed to learn from that is because I can't very well get married and then say to my wife, oh, I'm sorry, honey, I didn't sleep with her, but I waited until she was on top of me. My stuff would be on the front porch. So, you know, I really would like your opinions on that story that I just told you.
Well, you said about the no means no, right? And so teaching and, you know, part of being sex positive and in creating a sex positive culture is teaching boundaries and consent for sure. And we focus on the no, which is great. And then to your point, I like to work with my clients and also focusing on your yes and what does your yes feel like in your body and how do you communicate your yes? And that varies person to person. But because if we know our yes, then our no becomes more clear. Then we're more boundaried on our yes and our no's. And then also, what does your maybe feel like, right? And so it's nuanced. It's not as black and white. No is no. But what is yes? What is maybe? How do you communicate those things inside? Like looking at the internal boundaries and also the external boundaries. And you know, to your story, Jonathan, it's like. You know, like you said, maybe you missed a cue or two, but so do we all, right? And all of a sudden
right.
She's coming on to you, and you're like, whoa, what just happened, right?
I mean, what did the other two think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of just like thinking about it. So I remember in grad school we talked about, for example, like kind of more of the nuances, the nonverbal communication, and how maybe folks with like disabilities. For example, someone who's blind might not pick up on how to flirt or like maybe learning some of those social cues from their peers. And I think that this kind of like how to say yes is like taught through like peer-to-peer education. And then the like how to say no is taught by like the adults and stuff, especially like if you're in like a high school setting and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that actually brings me to something. One of my best friends in the entire world, well, first of all, my sister, to give you some background on this, my sister was autistic. So I grew up with an autistic sister. So really, truly, that's being with someone and learning their thought processes and their ways of, you know, understanding the world and social situations, you know, growing up with someone and being very close siblings like that, people that are on the spectrum is kind of more normal to me than what you would consider to be, you know, the hypothetical norm type is standardized, you know. But what I've always noticed with all of them is a high sense of intelligence, but social cues are off. Nonverbal communication is off. And one of my best friends in the whole world, he has autism as well. And, you know, he struggles in relation, you know, trying to make friends. The poor guy, he graduated actually 6 months after I did. And just due to his field, he had to move, you know, to a different state. And then COVID hit and everything. It was, you know, nearly impossible for him to get out of the house and make any friends. And he'd call me. It's like, you know, I'm lonely, you know, my few friends back home, you know, you're back home, you know, I'm not good at making friends, you know, and I can't really join anything because COVID's hit, you know, shut everything down. And it was just really sad, you know, experiencing that journey with him, you know. Luckily now we're excited. He's going to be moving closer here within about 30 minutes away. So that'll be great. Everyone's excited about that, but you know, he's talked so much about how much he wants to be able to have, you know, dating and, you know, fun friends and relationships. You know, he's not sure how he feels, you know, about different dynamics of being like a dad or a husband or stuff like that, just because his empathy's off. He doesn't, you know, he has a hard time cohabitating. But he's such a sweet, loving person. But it's so hard for him to understand, you know, just how to even have a small talk. Small talk is very difficult. And
mm-hmm.
I think people with disabilities, it's so important that they also have that part in their life to what they are capable and is healthy and happy for them. You know, no one deserves to be without such a huge part of our existence, you know, and learning how to do that,
mm-hmm.
learning how to read body language, you know,
sometimes with humor, it makes things a little more simple that are otherwise complicated. I was on a sexuality mailing list, and one of the people on the sexuality mailing list, I'll never forget him, his name was Alex. And the thing was that every post he made, no matter what the subject was that we were talking about, came out like a Mad Lib. Like, and I'll explain to you why. It didn't matter. It's like you could pick a subject that had to do with having sex. And then he would respond to the post in this matter. He would say, well, as much as I'd like to experience such and such and such and such, but I can't do it being I'm an Aspie, meaning that he said he had Asperger's. But the problem was that he would say that every time he made a post, every time. Mm. And it was almost like as much as I'd like to comment on, you know, the thing we would be discussing, and it feels like in a way that, you know, it's like the poor guy. I mean, you know, and he would talk about sex almost like he was plugging up a VCR. It wasn't, and I
very
think that,
fembot.
Right. Now, the thing is about the fembot, I was just going to say about, like, Barbara, I was talking about the movie Austin Powers. And the first one, The International Man of Mystery, the one where Barbara was in. And I realized something about that movie is that movie would be very hard for somebody who has autism to watch, because the reason being is that the movie is filled with more double entendres than there are actually having sex. Every other word is a double meaning for this, a double meaning for that, and shagging this and all that other stuff, but it's actually more than sex actually happening. But if you're on the autistic spectrum and you have a hard time with that, I think a movie like that would be hard to watch. Don't you agree?
You know,
maybe because you guys have a hard time with humor sometimes. Maybe. I mean, what do you girls think?
Well, I mean, I teach in the autism spectrum world, but also my son has autism, and, you know, he loves it, that movie, all of them. But I think there was also a little bit where I would laugh and then he would laugh, and then we would even sometimes, when he was younger, talk about what was the double entendre, what made it double, right?
Right.
But I think it's, so whether it's somewhat scripted learning to be able to like it, but he really enjoys that. He enjoys Monty Python, the Holy Grail. I mean, a lot of things that are that you would think wouldn't be computed necessarily by someone on the spectrum, he really does like and enjoy. So I think, just like we always say, if you know one person on the spectrum, you know one person on the spectrum, right? It's very individual, like as are we all, as our neurotypical and neurodivergent. But, you know, I think it's also great to exercise the humor muscle. Like, his father is really funny, and my stepdad's really funny, so my son's grown up around humor, and he has, like, learned to incorporate it.
And, you know, I love that you bring that up, because my sister was never very humorous. She was very, very serious. But my brother-in-law, actually, I have another sister, and she grew up, she did not have that, but she married someone that did, and he is hysterical. I mean, and it just comes out of nowhere, and I think that's a special gift, you know, that sometimes comes along with that. You know, when you're when you're just a little bit, you know, different, you know, you see things different, you're able to add humor to that and enjoy it, you know, I think, and everyone's different in their own ways. I think that's something really, you know, important to remember. You know, they're, like we say, there's literally no two people alike, you know, that whether on you're on this spectrum or that spectrum, you know, we are all very neurodiverse, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, how has being in this particular field helped your own relationships, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I can say when you're dating, when you're out and I was out there dating, after my divorce, I was single, and, you know, men would find out that I'm a sex and intimacy coach or a sexologist, or they're like, what? Like, what does that mean? And there was both. There was, like, the run for the hills. I'm totally intimidated by that. And then
see, I get
was,
that from a
fire, you know,
dancing more than the sex coaching, honestly, because I've been
dancing
fire.
Yeah, for sure.
But at the same time,
and my current partner was like, great, this is awesome. Let's, like, you know, this is so fun. Let's talk about it. Let's learn, you know, learn together. And so I think just like we're talking about the spectrum, you get the whole, you know, and here's the other thing I would say is sex coaches do not have it all dialed in. It's not like I have perfect, fabulous sex all the time, 24 hours a day. I think people think that sometimes. It's just that I'm committed to the practice of sex positivity and sex education for myself, mm-hmm. for my clients, for my home, with my son, you know, kind of at large.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I think actually a lot of the reason I even ended up in this position as a coach is because I've been through so many things, and I've always shared my journey very openly and authentically. I was raised by ministers, which is funny. You know, I was definitely the psychedelic black sheep of the family. but I still have that in me. You know, I still want to, you know, show people that, you know, no matter what you go through, you know, you can enjoy life. Each new day is a time to, you know, create, you know, what when you think of, you know, what would your absolute dream life be? You know, just totally lavish, you know, and, you know, figuring out how to make a medium on that, you know, how to get that in this reality. And I think it's funny, a lot of people, you know, they may say, you know, well, I want a big house, well, I want to, you know, I want to have vacations, well, I want to be this, I want to be that. I don't really hear a lot of, I want to have a lot of sex. And that surprises me, because I think that really actually is in everyone's mind. Like, everyone wants good sex. Like that.
Or I
want to
say,
you know,
something else. This goes back to what I was saying about the humor being educational. Let me ask you this. Which would you rather do if you were to talk to somebody about, let's say the subject was faking orgasms. Would you rather have a 5-minute conversation with someone about faking orgasms or a 2-hour conversation about the diner scene in When Harry Met Sally?
definitely.
Which is more educational, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, that's a great scene. Everybody knows that scene. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's something I use that scene often when we're talking about faking orgasms. You know, men and women both fake orgasms. It's very common. You know, instead we'll often reference that scene or even like demo that scene, and it makes everyone laugh. But I think there's also what another guest touched on in the beginning of this podcast was that it's also really important to bring both, like to bring the humor, but also bring the science and to bring the neuroscience and the physiology and what can you do? What are some practices, right? If you just stay at humor, that also keeps it just at the surface. So again, back to like the using both of humor plus, you know, soundness plus depth plus science. And so combining them, but you know, I love that scene When Harry Met Sally.
I love that too. And that really makes, you know, I love that you bring that point up because, you know, a lot of people, when they go into the sex store, they'll see, you know, the book on Tantra or whatever, but they don't, a lot of people don't realize that it's an ancient Buddhist practice stemming, you know, all the way back to Hinduism, of really truly embodying your body, you know, seeing that it's a beautiful, fun, healthy, happy, good thing to enjoy life, whether you're eating good food or you're swimming in the ocean or you're having really good sex or, you know, you went and, you know, whatever harvest it is that you've done, you know, whatever action that it is that you've done in your body, you know, mm-hmm. that is life itself. And that mm-hmm. that's not to be turned into a nasty, dark thing. That's to be done it, you know, do it 100%, 200% every day. Do it, be happy, be healthy, you know. Sex is exercise. Sex creates endorphins. Sex brings mm-hmm. people together. And hell, not even just having sex, just hugging. How many people hug anymore?
Mm.
Hugging,
well,
yeah.
Well, with not a lot. So, I mean, you know, it's yeah.
You know, intimacy has turned into, it's not just sex. You know, intimacy itself has changed. You know, people are afraid to hug or, you know, hold, you know, kids hold hands, kids hug, you know. At what age does that, you know, why is it? You know, it makes you think, well, why does that go away? Why do we feel we're doing that? You know, why is it we, you know, obviously, you know, you don't want to, you know, hug someone dangerous, of course, and you kind of learn that, you know, to gauge that you don't want to just you can't really randomly, like, run up and hug someone you don't even know. That's kind of weird, you know. But, you know, just in friendships, you know, it's just interesting, I guess, for me growing up, I've noticed as I've gotten older, that has diminished a lot. I feel like it was different. I don't know about what you guys think about that. Do you agree with that, that that's kind of become demonized a little bit?
Yeah, I would agree that, like, the just, like, enjoying sex in general, or just, like, kind of, and, like, just enjoying, like, kind of the process of learning about it. Is that what you kind of mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then that's why I really like to use, like, pop culture in my teachings and stuff. Like, for example, the scene where Kevin in American Pie, who's played by Thomas Ian Nicholas, he's actually super curious about pleasuring, I'm totally blanking on the character's name, but the Tara Reid character in the movie. And so mm-hmm. he actually goes into the library and, like, finds the book, the underground book that all of the kids have been adding to and stuff. And so I just love, and that was so inspiring, like, how curious he was. He really wanted to give his girlfriend good oral sex. Yes, it's so good. And so I really hope that, like, men see that and get inspired to pick up those Tantra sex books, to and not just pick up or get the Kama Sutra confused with Tantra, and not just pick those books up to just have them or whatever, but, like, really experience them and stuff. So, yeah.
I have to say that in American Pie, you got to love the father. I mean, Jim.
Oh, my God, he's the best.
He's an
amazing,
nice character. It's like, oh, well, son, yeah, he never gets really mad. He just sort of, it's like, oh, you ruined yourself to yourself. Okay.
He makes me belly laugh. I love that actor so much. He does such a great job with that character.
But, you know, to your point about that scene in American Pie, but also you mentioned your TikTok videos use humor. It's right. So our TikTok is called Touchy Subjects, but we same thing. You have 8 seconds, right? Look at the attention spans. You've got short form mm-hmm. content, and humor is a great way to catch people's attention, to say, let's learn about this stuff. Let's start talking about sex. Everybody wants to have great sex, and nobody wants to talk about it, right? So humor is a really great entry point, for sure. Absolutely.
Adding stimulus to it. It's like, okay, do you want a cheeseburger, or do you want, like, a really juicy charboiled, you know, get the flavor in there, the seasonings, you know, really, because it makes a difference. You know, it does.
Totally.
When you're learning, do you want to be miserable, or do you want to enjoy it and have fun? You know, it helps you. Mm-hmm. It helps with long-term memory, too, and understanding and application.
Mm-hmm. You know, and another thing that just popped in my head about humor is, if you're, let's say, a couple is exploring or experimenting, or you're helping them, you know, coaching them to about role play, right? People get so damn serious about role play, and I'm always like, just add some humor, add some laughter into role play. Like, start with a little scene. You don't start with something like, you know, Gone with the Wind elaborate costume. You can start with a little scene, but bringing laughter in, because I think that's a big barrier to, you know, something like role play, because it's like, well, I'm not an actor, and this has to be supposed to laugh your way.
Right on.
It.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have a really good show to recommend that goes into that. It's Kim's Convenience, and the mom and the dad of the show, they they both kind of like startle each other, and then they start role playing, and it just happens so naturally. And I'm like, this is what I use. Like, I tell people, like, you follow that script, and or don't even have a script. Just let it flow naturally, and it'll work itself out. Oh, yeah,
mm-hmm,
I love it.
Mm-hmm. So good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
I mean,
it's because you have the spontaneity of figuring it out, the stumbling, the fumbling, you know, it's fun.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean.
Oh, and.
Go on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I was just going to say another thing about like fun and kind of going back to my point about porn and like kind of entertainment around sexuality is that burlesque used to have a lot of, and I mean, probably it still does today. It has a lot of humor involved in it and a lot of the dancing.
Oh, yeah.
There might be like with the skits and stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love burlesque for that reason, blending the humor
actually,
with that. Like,
yeah.
Josephine Baker and Mae West.
TikTok that I asked, because you know how in the olden days they would, people who would act and then they would take cabs to their acting jobs, right? And in the back scene of their acting, of the taxi cab, they would get together with the person that they were acting with and then they would rehearse their lines on the way to the scene. So I asked them, I asked this lady who's a porn star, I said, do porn stars ever do that? You know? I mean, in the back of the Uber, do they ever say, listen, don't mind us. You know, we're just getting ready to do a scene, and we're just rehearsing some lines. And, you know, it won't be really anything nasty or anything. By the way, my name is Ron Jeremy, and this is Jenna Jameson. But don't pay any attention to who we are. We're just going to...
Yeah. Well, and often in porn, as we know, I mean, it's gotten better over the years, but it's, you know, the dialogue is not the forefront. So
yeah.
And there
yeah.
is all hilarity.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
I remember being young, like in my teenagers and seeing my first porn, and, you know, it was like a VCR, a VHS tape, you know, and it was,
yeah.
And I was like so entertained by the dialogue. I started like laughing and giggling, and it was also very taboo and all the things, you know, at the time. But
oh,
the dialogue,
God.
I was like,
yeah,
this
like
is
back
actually
in the,
funny.
Skinamax days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was lucky. I had the thing called Squiggle Porn, where it was like it would change, like Channel 76 would change at like midnight to the porn, but you'd still be able to hear everything. So every once in a while, you'd be able to see a boob or a butt cheek. It was great.
Right. Damn, was good old days before we got all kinds of crazy and what.
Yeah.
No, you know, I never actually did any interactive. I always did solo work for camming and stuff like that. So I don't have any experience in that. But, you know, I, as an actress, I would imagine that, you know, you would need to have chemistry a little bit. You know, you just show up and, you know, but then again, I don't know. I mean, what's the experience in that? Because I don't have experience in that part.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah, I mean, a lot of the female forward porn that's coming out now, and you know, ethical porn, female forward porn, the woman actually has a lot of say in what goes on in the scene, and often they are actually partnered, you know, and you can feel the difference. You can feel the difference for sure.
In
yeah.
other words,
well, I think that
together.
Filming has also increased in regulations, and I think that's helped as well.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, I mean, it's interesting because I have a question. Now, if somebody wanted to find all three of you, obviously, well, what I'm trying to say is this is an individual question. Where would they look? Because obviously, like, for example, let's start with Stormy. Where would somebody find you if they wanted to seek you out to get for advice?
Yeah, it's great. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for asking. I mean, so we're on TikTok at Touchy Subjects with three S's. So Subjects with three S's. So we're doing TikTok and we're doing daily sex facts and, you know, some humor videos, trying to do that short form content and really shed some light, love, and education around touchy subjects, you know.
Okay.
And then we're lovedeeperlab.com is the best way to find me in our programs. You know, we have a 21-day pleasure challenge coming up June 1st. That's a fun challenge. We did it in January and had about 100 people in it. So that's another, and that's also on that lovedeeperlab.com.
Okay. Now, Ashley, where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, so my TikTok is SH_Emerald. So, like, you use a little at symbol and then SH_Emerald. And then my website is emeraldsexualhealth.com. So you can contact me through my website.
Okay. And Mary, what's the best place to reach you?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So I'm pretty much all over social media, and I my last name is Italian, so I'm actually the only Mary Brooke Holly. So I'm pretty easy to find. So Mary in the last name is spelled B-R-A-C-A-L-E. You know, I've got TikTok, I've got Instagram, Facebook, all that. I've got a YouTube. Been working on getting a website, but that's still under construction. Ran into some issues with that, just with scheduling and stuff like that. But that'll be up soon, and that'll be marybrookholly.com. And I do, you know, individual sessions. I can set up a contract for clientele, and I'm basically, you know, just here with you through your journey. You can watch mine. I'm very raw, a little bit of a reality TV type situation, you know, just on social media, where I do, you know, my full-time is acting and entertainment because, you know, that's what brings me joy. But I do the coaching on the side and, you know, just helping people find what makes them happy and healthy and pursue their passions, you know, whatever that is. Okay. So you can just find me on social media pretty easy.
All right. Well, we're about out of time, but thank you for all three of you for being here. And I will see to it that you all get a link to the show that you can promote it on your social media. Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Good night, everyone.
Nice sharing time.